This is the Vox Pop, and we're introducing you to our wonderful panel today. Paul Rapp, intellectual property lawyer and writer in the Berkshires. He represents musicians, writers, fine artists, and businesses involved in the creative economy. He lectures widely on intellectual property issues and wrote a column for Metroland. And it actually, he writes it. We don't know whether he wrote it. We'll see whether that...
I think I'm going to write another one tomorrow.
Yeah, okay.
Just for, giggles.
Our wonderful Polly Law is an artist and illustrator. She runs an art studio and maintains a website at buttonwoodart.com. Give us a call at 1-800-348-2555. People are already gathering. 1-800-348-2551. You can Vox Pop us at WAMC.org and ask your question that way. But we'd love to talk to you. 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Layla in Mount Tremper. Layla, you're on.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
This is a situation that happened to a friend of mine. As she relates it, she spent some time talking to a friend of hers about, told her life story, which had some really interesting twists and turns. And then this other friend or acquaintance wrote up a story, I think it's a fictionalized story, which was, according to my friend, very much just followed this person's life story. And I don't know if it's her sensitivity or whether it was really that literal or whatever. I don't think any name or identifying things like that were in the story, but she clearly recognized it as the events that she had related to her in that previous conversation. So she felt ripped off. And I didn't know whether she had any basis for, any legal basis for anything with that.
I don't think so. And not in New York State. Is the friend in New York State?
I believe so.
Yeah, because we're talking really here about the right of publicity and the right of privacy. And New York State has, and it's a state-by-state thing, which is really weird. It shouldn't be. It should be one law for everybody, but it varies wildly from state to state. And New York has some of the most lax privacy laws in the country. And so, really, unless...
your friend would have to prove that she was harmed by this being written about, and real harm, not just maybe her pride was hurt.
Yeah, and that would mean that people would have to understand that this was about her as opposed to a fictional character,
right,
that all these things happened to. But it's a very difficult road to hoe with that, especially in New York State. Other states, if she lived in other states, it might be a little bit easier. I don't see it here.
I once wrote a column about a series of columns in the Berkshire Eagle about a fictitious character. I never named him, never said who he was. He was so incensed that he would write to the editor and say, "In the editor, I'm that guy," and he would want that published. So people can feel very strongly about this kind of thing.
Yeah. And people for good reason. And you understand, they feel violated. There was the case with the guy Kramer, whose name was Kramer.
Yeah.
Who was a weird guy, who was a friend of Jerry Seinfeld's, and was the basis for the Kramer character in the Seinfeld show. And he tried to, and he didn't get anywhere.
Never tell your life story to a novelist.
or to me.
I wonder if she felt, I think part of it was that she was a writer herself and was planning to do some writing about her own life. I don't know if that's related.
Well, she probably still can, and probably do it with a lot more interestingly than the fictitious version, mm-hmm. which was a lot of filling in the blanks. Truth is a lot more interesting than fiction. So,
you know what I love? I love the idea that all these people, even if legally, Paul, it's a conceptual case that they have.
Mm-hmm.
You're entitled to sue, for this. Nobody has any idea about how hard it is to do it and who you have to pay and how much money you're out by the time it's all done. And then you don't win.
And courts tend to not like these cases because the law is so
murky.
Yeah, they're murky and they're ugly, and the law is sort of not well defined. And so courts really sort of dislike this kind of thing. And I've dealt with a couple. And generally, they just don't go anywhere.
Layla, thanks. Sorry we disappointed
you.
But we appreciate your call.
No, it's fine. I just wanted to know what you thought. Thank you.
Go tell her. Thanks, bye. Let's go to Lisa in Ballston Lake. Lisa, you're on.
Hi. I was wondering, I put a piece of artwork on Flickr and Pinterest, and it's since taken off, but I don't have a copyright for it, and I wonder if basically I gave away that piece of art by doing that, by voluntarily putting it out there.
Well, there are a couple of things to consider. Number one, any art post, any image posted on the internet is done at a very low resolution, so the art cannot be printed from the internet. That's a good thing.
What if somebody copies it? I mean, you know.
You mean translates it into
a good
another
idea,
medium?
And then, no, it's a good idea. Yeah. Comes across as a picture, low pixel count, and then sits down with a paintbrush and repaints it.
Well, that's
there are people on Etsy who are selling it.
Yeah. Well, I would suggest that you register the piece.
Yeah, because you haven't lost the copyright. But if I were you, I agree with Paul. You should register the photo with the copyright office. And then stop people from selling it, because that's infringement. I mean, on the internet, you put it on Pinterest, I think, with the hopes that, you know, people are going to enjoy it and share it. But once they start selling it, that's crossing the line.
Yeah.
And I think you are able to go after them, but you should register first.
Do you know how to do that, Lisa?
No, I don't.
Paul's going to tell you right now.
Go to copyright.gov.
Okay.
And get into their electronic filing system. And then you will get, incredibly annoyed and frustrated because it's really hard to use.
Have a nice glass of wine at your elbow.
Yeah,
and
or if you find somebody that's been through the horrible process, you know, I mean, it shouldn't take you more than 10 minutes, except the site is so badly constructed, you may lose your mind before you get done. But
And how much will you have to pay?
It'll be $35 to register.
Okay. And that will be, if someone does infringe on that copyright, that will be your entree to representation and to a court that possibly actually understands copyright law.
Now, what if they say, what if the person who's infringing says, wait a second now, I noticed the copyright is this date, but I actually started to sell it, 2 months before.
Well, that means simply you won't be able to get really enhanced damages. You won't be able to get your attorney's fees paid for, and you'll only be able to get what their profits are. Another thought I had is go to the terms of service of these sites where people are selling it, and send takedown notices.
Yeah.
If you go into the terms of service, you'll see a copyright section where it'll tell you, and there may even be a form to fill in, complaining that, you swear that this is your intellectual property, which it is, and that somebody is using it without your authorization.
For commercial purposes.
For commercial purposes.
And how do you go, how exactly would Lisa do that?
Well, go to the site where they're selling it and go to the terms of service and look for the copyright.
Where do you
policy.
See terms of service?
Down at the bottom.
Down at the bottom, usually there's a link, and you sort of wade through it, and at some point there'll be copyright policy, and they are bound by law to take it down if you complain, to investigate and to take it down if there's any indication that it's infringing. So
for the future, though, one thing that I always do before I post an image on like Facebook or any of these other sites is I take my copyright notice and paste it over the image and then gray it out so it is barely visible. It does not interfere with the image, but it is there. It can be seen by someone.
Lisa, thanks for the call. Appreciate it very
Thank
much.
Thank you.
Okay. We're going to take a short break. I think it's time for a short break. I think we haven't done this yet, and we'll be right back.
Comes from Snow Farm, Williamsburg, Massachusetts, a New England craft program offering workshops in a farm setting. Open 3 weekends in November, make your own glass-blown ornament. Work from over 200 artists, snowfarm.org. Stories Nursery, Freehold, New York, featuring a variety of plants, trees, and gifts for the holidays. Open Monday through Saturday, 8 to 5, and Sundays, 9 to 4. A gardener's destination, storiesnursery.com. Quality Foreign Car Care, Ballston Spa, New York, specializing in European car sales and service for over 20 years. QFCC.com. Kingsway Community Schenectady, offering a continuum of care and services to area seniors since 1975, including rehabilitation and more. Caring in the family tradition. KingswayCommunity.com. and Carrie Haddad Gallery Hudson presenting Color Theory, an exhibit of abstract paintings by Vincent Pamelio, James O'Shea, and Stephen Brophy. Through Sunday, open 7 days, carriehaddadgallery.com.
And we're back thanks to our wonderful Zach, who reminds me where we are and what day it is. Okay, we're here with Paul Rapp. We're here with Polly Law. Thanks, guys, for being here. We'll take the next call.
Oh, and we'd like to shout out to Bill Westwood, our absent friend.
Westwood 3.
Yes. Yeah. He's down in Georgia today.
What's he doing?
I have no idea.
I don't know.
He's probably the best medical illustrator in the United States.
Yes.
Well, I think he is.
He's phenomenal. I recommend it to a certain museum over in the Berkshires on Route 183, mm-hmm. just before you get to the Botanical Gardens, that they do a show with him. And they told me maybe sometime in the future, but that was a mistake on their part. I want to say that again. Let's go to Marie in Newburgh. Marie, you're on.
Oh, boy. I have so many questions. I don't know if you can... Sorry, you don't let me on all that long. But anyway, I wanted to start writing in different genres without using the same name for each genre, in case I get better known in one genre than another. Mm-hmm. How do I go about doing the names, different names? Do I just say so?
You just tell the publisher. But when you register the copyright for those works, there is a line on the copyright form to cover that.
For pseudonyms. Uh-huh. And, I would Google the name you're going to use first to make sure you're not using somebody who's actually another writer and using their name. But, other than that, just go ahead and do it.
Yeah. And then, your publisher will send your royalty checks to you because they will know that you are writing as so-and-so.
Now, I'm actually looking over a book deal right now where a guy is going to be basically a ghostwriter for a series, and the series has a named author that this guy has to agree that his books will go out as, and he's one of several people that are all writing under the same name.
Yeah. All right, so what happens at the end of the year when I do tax filings? How do I approach that?
Well, the
with
checks...
all these different names.
No, the check is coming to you from
the
publisher, therefore... There's only one person to be taxed.
Yeah. I mean,
oh, good.
Just make sure the money comes to you. Or, I'm not going to suggest
that. Or to WAMC. Right. Marie, thank you so much for the great call. Appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you. Bye. Yeah.
And let's go to Mark in Kingston, 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Mark in Kingston, you're on.
Hi. I would like to know how I transfer rights. Portions of rights to my songs to other people, both publishing or mechanical rights.
It's a good idea.
Percentages.
It's a good idea to put it in writing, and it doesn't have to be terribly elegant or involved. You just write down, what rights, what portions of rights you're assigning, and what percentages, and for how long, and to whom, and there you go.
Sign it, and you're good to go.
If you want to have an intellectual property attorney look it over and make sure that it's kosher, but it has to be pretty incoherent not to be kosher.
How do ASCAP or BMI distribute royalties based on those?
The various rights holders will all register their percentages with ASCAP and BMI, and you swear that these are the true percentages, and make sure they don't add up to more than 100, and like the producers, and that'll be fine. I mean, if it all if everyone's in agreement and registers with ASCAP BMI, they're not going to question it.
I see. So I basically make the contract or make some sort of assignation in writing to these other people, and then it's their responsibility to actually contact ASCAP or BMI.
Yeah, and you might write that into the agreement. It'll be their responsibility to register their percentages with the performing rights organizations.
Okay, great. And it's no difference between publishing or mechanical rights?
No, it shouldn't be. Then you'll want to register with Harry Fox or, you know, whoever is administering the mechanicals.
Okay.
It's great you know what I'm talking about. It's great to have a musician that understands this stuff. Yeah, because it took me years.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay.
I appreciate it.
I like this term, assignation of writing. You know, that always reminds me a little bit of Shades of Grey. so let's go to Mike in Saratoga. Mike, you're on.
Oh, Mike. Hi. How are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm not sure if this is a trademark or copyright question, but I'll pose my hypothetical. And let's say for Alan's sake, let's say I'm starting a band called the Andrew Sisters. So something from his generation. What's the easiest way to see if that is available? Basically, has it been abandoned? I know there was an Anderson, but like, you know, the Beatles, like, how can you find out if that trademark or the name of that group?
Well, you can do a search at the trademark office.
Yeah, I mean, you can do a search at the U.S. PTO office, and really just a Google search.
Yeah.
You know, because trademark rights, you know, arise when somebody uses something as a trademark, not necessarily when they go and they register. So, you know, a Google search, and then you can see if somebody's still out there, if they've got recordings, if they're still being sold, you know, whether they're still a band or not, their recordings still may be being sold, and so the band name is still functioning as a trademark. And really kind of use common sense. You know, when the internet first hit, people came running to me going, oh my God, there's a band with, you know, the same name, and what are we going to do? And I'd go online and see it was a group of 16-year-olds in Australia who'd never played anywhere but their parents' basement, and they were calling themselves this name. And I'm going, you know, you really don't have to worry about this. So it's a matter of degree and common sense, but I would just do a Google search and see what's out there.
Yeah, but I get his point. I mean, it's annoying when somebody takes your name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's annoying.
Yeah.
Even if they're in their basement, their parents' basement, still annoying.
Yeah, well, they may not have taken their name. I mean, there's the outside possibility that it was an innocent construction of a name, but yeah.
And the name of the group would be a trademark, though.
It functions there. That's a classic trademark use is naming a band. I mean, back in the day, I played in the band Blotto, and we became aware that there was a band in Chicago called Mr. Blotto. And, you know, they were a jam band, and, you know, my band wasn't playing that much. So we just contacted them and had a truce. Said, look, just don't, you know, we won't stop you from using your name and vice versa.
And the fact that you're an IP lawyer probably helped persuade them.
Well, they were pretty smart guys. And I said, maybe we can play a gig together because the marquee would look really great. Mr. Blotto.
Yeah.
Hey, Mike, thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay. All right, bye-bye.
1-800-348-2551. We'll go to Edward in the Berkshires. Okay, Edward, you're on.
Yes, good afternoon. Quick question. I photographed somebody 30 years ago who 30 years ago said that we're going to be really famous. Now that person is very famous, an icon, and I've seen some of my photographs appear in numerous books, publications, even on MTV, and I'm without my name on it, without any authorization, without any compensation. So I'm just curious what your opinion is on something like this.
And so this was 30 years ago when you
Correct.
Took them, 1985?
Yeah.
So they'd be covered by the Copyright Revision Act of 76.
Yeah. Well, you can still register the copy. I mean, you own the copyrights to the images, and you can still register them.
Okay.
And start demanding some royalties from these people. How did they get the photo? Was it through your friend?
I had given them, and in fact, I was never even compensated for the shoot. I was told I was going to be paid for it, and I was never paid.
Do you still have the negative?
Oh, yeah. I still have the negative. I still have the film. I even have a movie.
And you never signed over any rights of any sort?
Never signed anything over, but I did supply one person with a few of the images. They were very small images. They were actually contact prints, 4x5 inches. Those are the images that have appeared over and over again in numerous books, even to this day.
Well, did you give him permission in writing to use
them?
No,
I did not. No.
Did you give him permission?
No.
Word of mouth? It wouldn't matter, really.
Right.
But.
No. But and there, when it appears, sometimes it'll say from the collection of this person's name. But I'm just, so if I copyright or register these, then I can go after them if I want. Or.
Well, yeah, and I think you should maybe start going after them right now, and in the meantime, try to get your registration lined up. You know, and they may just say no and dare you to, you know, dare you to sue them because this has been going on for a number of years. They may say you've sat on your rights too long and
right.
You know, you're not, it's not fair for you now to start going after it. But, you know, that's
right.
Really a factual determination that, you know, until all the facts are in, you're really not going to be able to make a determination of. So.
So, Edward, have you ever talked to this person and just said, "Hey, this isn't fair. This ain't right."
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, and talk to the celebrity who might say, "Well, it's been 30 years. Where you been?"
Well,
you know,
that celebrity is so famous, can't even get close to her, not him.
Okay, Edward, thank you very much.
All
appreciate
right, thank you,
it.
Alan.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good luck.
Bye-bye.
And we'll go to Patrick in Poughkeepsie. Patrick, you're on.
Hi, thanks very much. I had a hopefully quick question about higher ed and copyrights and things. If I want to put a picture from the internet on my PowerPoint or like play a video in my class and it's not explicitly fair use, is that something I can do? Or?
That is explicitly fair use.
It probably is, and as long as it stays inside the classroom, it's you know, sort of no harm, no foul.
What does that mean, explicitly fair use?
The fair use.
Well, I mean,
no, I'm not talking to you about this, Patrick. I'm talking to our esteemed panel over here because
I apologize.
No apologies necessary. But when I hear something that I don't understand, I figure there are a lot of other people out there who don't understand it. So I always ask the question.
When the copyright law was revised in 1976, their fair use provisions were written into it, which were to allow the limited use of copyrighted material in a very specific set of circumstances.
Right.
And education
was one of, is the main one.
But and so it's probably okay. I mean, when I taught, I used copyrighted materials all the time.
Sure.
And I probably could have gotten licenses and maybe should have, but you know, if you're showing a video in class,
it is directly relevant to the class.
Yeah,
you're not
you're going to be okay.
So how about all those professors who take chapters out of books and reproduce them?
Course books. That's very controversial, and it's still happening. And there's been a lawsuit. There's a big lawsuit involving Georgia State, which is kind of the trial lawsuit going after teachers putting stuff on digital reserves and whether or not they should be getting licenses for them. And that case is ongoing. But most of the uses that the professors have done has been found to be fair use.
Yeah. There's an organization called the Copyright Clearance Center that was set up specifically to deal with these kinds of situations of putting together course books. And they have very, the owners of the copyrights of these books, of this material, have set rates for different levels of use. And so licenses can be obtained to
more easily than ever.
Yes.
And that's one thing that these publishers are relying on, is it's so easy to get a license, a click-through license online, that all of these teachers should be doing it and all the kids should be paying for it.
Yeah.
And the Georgia State... It was funny. The Georgia State, there was like 100 different things that were on digital reserve that these publishers were suing over.
Digital reserve? What's that in the library? You mean?
Yeah, in the library, they just say this is extra reading for the class, and it turned out like 80 of the 100, not a single student looked at. and the court said, "Well, there's not really any infringement here if nobody ever looked at it."
Yeah.
Well, that's a long way from Hunter College, where we all read the stuff.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah. That's just the way it was. Hey, Patrick. Good call. Thanks a lot. Okay, we'll go to Gina in Goshen, 1-800-348-2551. You want to get in on it? Now's the time. You wrote a short story that you think showed up in a famous national magazine, didn't you? So Gina, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. This happened many, many years ago. I had a patent on a design, an article of clothing, and I was trying to license it to a larger company, and they looked at my design, they really liked it, and then I didn't hear back from them, and subsequently I saw the same design was slightly modified.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
And clearly it was my idea, but they changed it in such a subtle way that I guess I had no, mm-hmm. you know, nothing to stand on. A and B, it would have cost, you know, quite a lot of money to try to go after them to hire a lawyer, so I was left doing nothing. And I've just been always, I often wonder about, like, how that all happened and
well,
what I could have done or should have done.
That's why, you know, the day after the New York runway shows, those fashions are being ripped off and manufactured overseas to be shipped back
yep.
to, like, H&M and
or 87th Street Broadway.
Yep.
But mm-hmm. you know, but you said you actually had legal protection. You had a patent or something like that.
Yeah,
for...
I have. I still hold the patent, and I have the. I had a registered trademark, which I've since let go because I wasn't using,
yeah.
using it longer.
Yeah. Well, I mean, did you consult an attorney to see whether it was worth going after? Because if you had a registered patent and they were found really to be infringing, you know, you could get your attorney's fees
yeah.
paid for, and you know, if you have a real pit bull of a patent attorney. Those lawsuits can be so ugly and so expensive
they'll
that
settle.
They'll settle
that's,
very, very quickly.
That's probably why I didn't go ahead, because I didn't want to get involved in that.
Yeah, and it's
myself, you know.
Yeah, it's not pretty, and sometimes it feels like a shakedown, and a lot of times
yeah.
it is. But and neither Polly and I are patent experts, but we know enough to try to avoid, you know.
Can I ask you a second question?
Yeah, sure.
The other thing that happened related to my business and my registered trademark was I had, that was my domain as well.
Mm-hmm.
In 1999, I believe, I started working online with that domain name. And sadly, you know, my father had died, and I, as punctual a person as I am, and I keep on top of everything, I totally missed this deadline to renew my domain name.
And it was poached.
And I guess they were sending notices to an old address.
Right.
So I didn't get the reminders, and B, I didn't, you know, remember myself. So I lost it, and I tried to contact this fellow in Korea who bought it, and I got no response. And
yeah.
therefore, I got a $50 check from my domain name from the company where it was registered, where I could have sold it for a lot more had I wanted to, and
yeah.
I didn't at that time, you know. So
well,
nothing to do about that.
Is this just a story to warn other people, or do you want...
You know, partly, it's true. You know, it's good to get all this out there so people are more aware of, you
yeah.
know, the pitfalls, but also just in hindsight, looking back, I wonder if I had any recourse.
If you had been using this domain and you had greater rights to it than this Korean person that jumped on it when yours expired, you might have had a case under the ICANNs, the International
yeah.
Internet Protocol people. And they
huh.
they have and you can bring a sort of it's a very informal proceeding, and if you show that you have the superior rights and long lasting rights to a domain, and the person has just grabbed it to be, you know, vexatious and stupid, well then sometimes you can get it awarded to you back. They will actually
not easy,
but you need
but
to
not
do
not
it.
Easy.
You need to do it in
no.
a timely
it's,
manner
it's a,
too.
It's the filing fee is like $1,200, and
yeah.
you know it. It might take a while, but people do it. I'm about to do it myself for a client.
Well,
so.
You can also do a thing where you take the trademark name, you put a dot next to it, and then you say clothing.com or something. You can add on to that original
right.
name so
right.
that when people, you know, if people Google your original trademark name, your site, your trademark name site will come back
you'll,
up again.
You'll come
okay,
back
I hate
first
to
page.
Rust up this party, but we have to take a short break and we'll be right back. Gina,
Thank
thanks
you,
a
bye.
Lot. Bye-bye.
Support comes from Empire Exhibits and Displays, Mechanicville, New York. Custom exhibits, interactive media displays, and commercial casework for corporate interiors, museum installations, and trade shows. EmpireExhibits.com. Cowan's Auctions, available for estate, trust, and full collection evaluations. George E. Heigl for consultations, 518-369-7994. The Whistling Kettle, featuring Tea of the Month Club's Tea Discovery, Wellness Tea, Herbal and Caffeine-Free Tea, and more. TheWhistlingKettle.com for catalog and online ordering. The Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences in the Capital District and beyond. Skidmore.edu/Tang. And de Blas's Chamber Music Series, presenting its 83rd season with three Sunday afternoon concerts through November 22nd at the Hyde, Glens Falls, New York. DeBlasis-chamber-music.org.
Thank you. Thank you so much for protecting all of us, Zachary, putting the light on, making sure, you know, I didn't say something I shouldn't have said. We're here with Paul Rapp and Polly Law. We've got a Ron in Great Barrington. Hi, Ron. How you doing?
Hello?
Hello, Ron. You're on.
Oh, hi. Well, thank you. My question was, you know, you mentioned that the cost of copywriting is $35 per item, and I'm a visual artist, and oftentimes I do series of 25, 50, and even 100 pieces.
Mm-hmm.
That could get very expensive. It could be, I'd be paying over $3,000 just to copyright one series. Is there any way to copyright a series of work?
You can do a gang copyright. As long as the images have not been published separately, you can gang them all into one big registration. You just have to provide a list of all the titles with images,
mm-hmm.
and you have to keep one for yourself so if someone refers to a piece in the collection, you know which image it is and what gang copyright it is covered under.
And I have painters, visual artists that I do this for a couple of times a year. They'll send me everything they've put out in the previous 6 months. And as long as they haven't been published, which means they haven't made prints or giclées or put them on coffee cups or something.
Or they haven't appeared in Art in America or something.
Right, right.
And is that what published means? Yeah.
Yeah. There just haven't been, multiples haven't been made and distributed to the public. You can put them all on one application and, you know, for
$35
or $55 or however much it is, it's a real bargain. I mean, I've done hundreds of works in one application.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So Paul Rapp, you have a law practice over there that does this for people.
Yes, I do.
Okay. Paul Rapp, R-A-P-P.
The largest intellectual property law firm in Monterey, Massachusetts.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Ron, thanks for calling. Okay, we'll go to Robert in Stockbridge. Robert, you're on.
Oh, thank you. I have a hypothetical. I have, let's say, a web business, and I have a few people working for me. One is an hourly employee that gets a W-2 form, and the other is a contract employee that gets a 1099 at the end of the year.
Uh-huh.
Both of them provide content and imagery. What I'd like to know is who owns the content and imagery?
You own it for the employee. For the contractor, in the absence of a contract that says you own it, chances are he's going to own it. So you should really have a work for hire kind of agreement with the independent contractor. That gives you the ownership because you really, obviously, you want it.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Okay, and we'll go to Albert in Hudson, New York. Okay, Albert, you're on.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Good.
So far, so good.
I was wondering, I'm also a visual artist.
Could you speak
Albert,
up?
Yeah, we can't hear you. You got to talk into the phone, okay?
Hello?
Much better.
There you are.
Okay, great. I'm also a visual artist, and I was wondering, when it comes to photo reference, you know, I don't necessarily have access to, like, a Bengali tiger or whatever, so naturally I'll go to Google. Mm-hmm. But if I use maybe, like, bits of a...
Hello?
Hello?
I think I can answer his question.
Good, go ahead.
Albert, if you use bits, but not the whole figure, say, of a of an image of a Bengal tiger, you're fine, because you are using that as reference as opposed to a deadlift copy.
This is kind of like reverse Jeopardy, isn't it?
Yeah. There's a famous case where someone did a mural of, I think they were Antarctic or Arctic animals, wildlife, and a couple of photographers from the National Geographic, you know, God rest its soul, came by and said, oh, well, that's my gray wolf, that's my polar bear, that's my, and the person was sued because it was a copyright infringement, because the person just copied the figures totally from the photographs.
It's kind of like when if someone wants to paint a famous person, you know, a portrait of fame, and you can't get the famous person to Justin Bieber to sit while you paint the portrait. They usually use four or five photographs as references, yeah, and incorporate bits and pieces of all of them. And I think that's, you know, kind of what if you want to do a Bengal tiger, you know, find five or six photographs of a Bengal tiger and then make your own image.
What about all these guys who just copy other people's work and the courts have allowed it?
I think we're talking about Mr. Prince.
I am.
Well, I mean, he's
that's a travesty.
He's a provocateur.
It may be a travesty, but he's getting away with it.
He's a provocateur, and this is part of his performance, and he's proved to be really good at it, whether you agree with it or not. We're talking about Richard Prince, the appropriation artist, who lives nearby. He's got his place. He's in Rensselaerville.
Really?
And he's done very well copying other people's work and calling it tweaking it a little bit and calling it his own. And he's become the darling of the art world, and he's done well. And you can't argue with success. You can argue aesthetics till you're blue in the face, but what's it going to do you?
You got to play the rules. Thank you very much. let's see, what happened here? Oh, yeah, we did that. No, I don't know. I have no idea. Let's go to number five. Hello, are you there?
Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
Thank you so much for taking my call. The question is there any truth to the poor man's copy?
No.
No.
No, I can't mail it to myself and register a receipt requested.
We already knew what you were going to say. And this is the most asked question.
Por favor, please.
No, sorry. I mean, you can do that, but it won't have any effect. It won't give you any legal protection.
Yeah, I mean, while you're putting things in envelopes and sending them, you should just send them to the copyright office, and then you have real registration.
$35, like the other guy said, before you get a chance to, you know, $35 hard to come by these days.
Well,
yes, so bulk is the way to go then, right?
Yeah.
Okay, and this is true of writing and artwork.
And visual art and film and music.
And photography, yeah.
You know, mailing it to yourself, the poor man's copyright, is really doesn't...
Isn't it?
It doesn't prove anything. It's easily faked. And there's never been a case where an infringer's on the stand and the lawyer holds up the magic envelope and the guy breaks down and says, I did it. It's just, you know...
Only on Perry Mason.
Yeah. You know, it's...
An honest soul. That's all I'm asking. An honest soul. Thank you.
Yep.
Thanks a lot.
I've had clients send me stuff and call me and tell me not to open it. And I'm like, what are you doing? Come on.
This is the number one asked question on this program.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes
so
more than once.
I think he was a little ticked off, to tell you the truth, because he called up and he said, let me ask you a question. I say, is it true? I say, no, it's not true. Okay, let's go to Danny in Great Barrington. Hiya, Danny.
Hey, Alan, how are you?
Well, so far, so good. Could use an ice cream myself. Go ahead.
Yeah, me too.
Come on over. I'll give you one.
Okay, go ahead.
Danny at the farm, by the way.
Oh, Danny at the farm. Okay.
Danny, you know me.
Yeah, sure, of course.
Okay. At any rate, my question is about self-publishing. Mm-hmm. I'm writing a lot of stories about the farm, and I'm going to be self-publishing them. A, do I have to copyright this, or is it automatically done in the act of publishing?
No, you have to register your copyright.
You don't have to, but it's a really good idea, you know, if you're
okay,
sending it out. So, yeah.
Exactly. What about, should they be done individually?
No.
If they're not published, no, I would do them all as a bunch.
Just say...
Same procedure, $35 plus, right?
Right.
Okay, that's all I needed to know. Right. Thank you very much.
That was easy enough.
Good luck, Danny. Thanks a lot. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. We can take a couple more calls, and let me say, now is the time to do it. Now you can get in. Let's go to Casey in northern Vermont. Casey, you're on.
Hello.
Hello, hi. Casey.
Hi. I had a question, and I didn't know if there was anything I could do about it, which is why I'm calling you guys. History-wise, I had a video of me put on, like, I'm 23 today, my birthday. And
happy
back
birthday.
In high school, thank you. Back in high school, I had a video of me put on of while I was performing. And I was a minor. I was 15 or 16 years old. And I reached out multiple times. The kid was like some kid from Germany, you know, never responded, put it on YouTube. Someone requested me put it down, yada, yada, yada. Today, I just graduated with a music degree, and I'm going for graduate school as an opera. And whenever you search my name, this, you know, random, like, video of, like, when I was 15 years old is me singing. He's, like, someone requesting to take it down. I reached out to YouTube multiple times. I did their, like, terms of services complaint thing, and they keep on turning it down. I don't know why. They're like, oh, you should contact, you know, the person who put it up. And it's like, yeah, you can look. I did it, like, 10 times.
There are a lot of videos that YouTube takes down when there's a problem. I don't know
yeah.
why they're balking at this.
Yeah, I'm surprised that they haven't taken it down. And I think you're right. You're stressing that you were a minor and this went up without your permission.
It's not a video, honey. It's not a good video.
Yeah, and it seems to me, I mean, the other thing is you sometimes you run the risk of playing a game of whack-a-mole where you get one taken down and another one goes right back up. But if there's only one on there, I think if you make your case plainly to YouTube,
I
don't know how many more angles I can go at, because every one of the angles, like, I was a minor, it was on my permission, it's using my face, my body, my, like, voice on there, my full name is on there.
Hmm.
So at this point, I don't even know what else I can do, because I keep on, and then, of course, like I said, you message the person, they're, like, from Germany, I can't speak German, they won't answer anyway.
You can get an intellectual property lawyer to write the letter to YouTube.
Yeah, to give it a try. And sometimes they'll pay a little more attention that way.
Okay, we want to try to get everybody in. Thank you, Casey. Great call.
Thank you so much.
Love
Good
your
luck.
Voice. Thanks.
Happy
Bye.
Birthday.
Bye.
Yeah. Let's go to Linda in Dalton. Linda, let's keep it short. Go ahead.
Hi, Alan. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My grandfather self-published 3 books in the 1950s,
mm-hmm.
and he gave them out as gifts to customers in his store in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And recently, I noticed that several of those books are for sale on eBay.
Mm-hmm.
And some for considerable amount of money.
Mm-hmm, right.
And I wonder who owns the copyright on them now. Now, my grandfather's long gone.
Well, are they selling copies that your grandfather gave away?
Yes.
Well, then that's really fine. I mean, that's under, like, if you go to Borders and mm-hmm. buy a book or someone gives you a book.
Then someone sells it secondhand. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what might be out of bounds is if someone was actually printing and making copies and selling new. And it probably drives you crazy because you're seeing now on the secondary market they're getting a lot of money for something your father gave away.
Paul, I'm kind of tickled by it.
Yeah.
I mean, I like the idea of this really awful writing going on.
Well, I'm not insulted. My first book, a major work called Strengthening the Wisconsin Legislature, is it's all over.
Yeah.
People can get it.
I mean, if I would assume that, well, were you your father's...
My grandfather.
Your grandfather's... okay, so the copyright would have passed on to... To your mother,
and to my aunts and uncles, and then to my cousins, the third generation.
But only if your father registered. In the 1950s, you had to register once you published, and you had to put a copyright notice on the work.
I'm fairly certain that the books are copyright. I mean, I have all 3 books.
Okay.
I just haven't looked recently to see if they're copyrighted.
Yeah, you ought to look at the frontispiece.
Okay, Linda, you're done. Thank you very much, Linda. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Let's go to Joe in South Hadley. Joe, you're on.
Hi, Alan. Thanks for taking the call. This
sure.
is short and sweet. I made a drawing, a pen and ink drawing, some years ago based on a photograph that I didn't realize was a fairly famous photograph. But my question was, the pen and ink was done, you know, a little dot at a time, the photograph with one snap.
Mm-hmm.
because it was so admired, I had a bunch of prints made. And then my daughter said, you can't sell that. It's somebody else's image. Is she right?
Yes.
Probably. You know, and it really depends how much your pen and ink diverges from the original. But
honestly, I mean, it's very, the basic outlines are the same, but of course it's black and white and gray.
Well,
and the photograph was just a photograph.
Let me ask you this. If someone held up your piece and held up the photograph, would they understand that you copied the photograph?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, but did he copy the copyrightable elements of the photograph?
The whole photograph is copyrighted.
But not necessarily. I mean, it's like the Shepard Fairey Obama poster. Sure. Shepard Fairey just took the outline of Obama's face, which the photographer doesn't own. The photographer owns the whole photograph.
He also took the topographic information of the
shadows. Talk to Richard Prince.
Photographs get pretty thin. You might have something, but it's a matter of degree, and Polly and I disagree.
And I'm on Paul's side. That makes it two.
I always like it when lawyers disagree.
I'm not a lawyer.
She's not a lawyer.
But she plays one on the radio.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Joe. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Okay,
very quickly.
I'm with your daughter.
Okay, very quickly, Jay of North Adams. Jay, make it quick.
Hi, Alan. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, it has to do with registering trade names. I know there's an issue over in the Berkshires right now, a name called Fire Cider.
Yeah, we were just talking about that.
Believe me, I know.
Okay.
I think you got a horse in that race. Right?
Yes,
well,
I do.
Yeah. I'll bring up another name, which is Urban Homesteading, which was another one that's been all over the internet. This term was used far before these people registered it. What is the issue going on with things like this? Why are they being accepted?
Well, Fire Cider, actually, it's a case that I'm working on, so I really can't talk about it. But
that's why I gave you another one.
but yeah, Urban Homesteading. I mean, that's truly a generic name, and for someone to register it. I mean, sometimes you can fastball stuff through the Patent and Trademark Office and get stuff registered, but, you know, at least for the first 5 years, it's subject to challenge, and anybody can go in and say, no, you shouldn't have granted that, and this is why.
Well, it's like when Adobe tried to trademark the term Illustrator their product.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Okay, very quickly, Jay, is that it? Are you satisfied or you're not satisfied?
It's good enough for now.
Okay, thanks a lot. Appreciate it. And finally, Mark from Salem. Mark, you're on.
Hi, I've got a little bit different question. I built an observatory on my property. It's a 10-sided building, mansard roof, very Victorian looking. I call it Hannibal Hill, like Mark Twain, because he was interested in astronomy. And a lot of artists have used it as subject matters in their paintings.
Okay, now this has got to be very fast because we're out of time.
They've made lots of money off of it. Is there some way for me to copyright that building? I mean, I'll have a blueprint, but can I protect that so they can't just run off and?
Is it viewable from a public forum?
It's viewable from one road.
Yeah, well then you can't protect that, but you can protect the overall design with a copyright for the
blueprint.
Guys, you're out of luck and you're out of time.
That's good.
Okay.
Thank you.
Right. Thanks to Polly Law and Paul Rapp for joining us today. Support for the Vox Pop comes from Putnam County Tourism, historic sites, farm-to-table dining, kayaking, hiking, biking, and more. Putnam County, where the country begins. Online, visit putnam.org for event calendar. The Habitat for Community, restore 70 Fuller Road, Albany, offering gently used furniture, appliances, building materials, and more. Donations accepted. HabitatCD.org/restore. Upstate Divorce Mediation, specializing in divorce mediation and collaborative divorce, helping couples who are seeking a legal separation or divorce. Offices in Albany, Saratoga, and Catskill. UpstateDivorceMediation.com. The Department of Theater Arts at SUNY New Paltz, presenting a gender-bending Shakespeare's Julius Caesar, stage in all-girls prep academy, stage in an all-girls prep academy, November 12th through 22nd, newpaltz.edu/theater. Again, thanks to Zach Malloy, our wonderful operator here, Susie Chekai, who took your calls, Jessica Blaustein-Marshall, who produces the show. I'm Alan Chartok. Stay tuned now for a news update.